Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and you are at the intersection of sexuality and religion, where it meets at LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. And welcome to part two of the Castro Mitchell episodes. We'll call it that. I'm excited to be able to have Josh in studio as well. The previous episode was his husband, Richard, which we kind of teased at the end of the episode. So if you missed that one, we invite you to pick up Richard's episode and kind of begin part one of this three-part series. So excited to have you, the listener and watcher, involved in another Latter Gay Stories episode. We thank you for giving us an hour of your time. And thank you if you are watching on a video version of the episode. As always, we invite you to participate in the comment section to be able to interact with other guests and interact specifically with this episode. And if you are listening on an audio version of the podcast, we invite you to subscribe to this channel wherever you are listening if you haven't already. And super important for us and for the reach of the Latter Gay Stories podcast is by having you leave us a rating. I know it doesn't sound like it is a monumental feat, but it does so much good by having listeners give us a rating and a review of this episode and others, because it does help us expand our reach as a podcast, and it helps us to build bigger and stronger bridges between those who are confused and not understanding of this community and to many of us who are trying to share a candid and vulnerable part of our stories in an effort to help people better understand. So if you'll do that for us, we would appreciate it a lot. So again, thank you. I want to welcome to the podcast episode Joshua Castro Mitchell.
Thank you.
We're going to call you Josh.
Yes.
I asked that. Specifically, do you want Josh or Joshua? And both suit you fine.
Yes, they do.
I'm excited for this interview. I'm super excited because we are going to talk about a number of topics. The fact that you are raised or you moved to Utah, raised in the Philippines, clearly identify somewhere along the LGBTQ spectrum because you're in the hot seat and you're sharing your story. We have an opportunity to really jump into just topics of culture, topics of ethnic differences between traditional Latter-day Saints, religious differences between your original life in the Philippines as a Roman Catholic, and then your conversion to Mormonism a little later in your life, your eventual coming out, then your life kind of takes you through, because of circumstances within your family, to Utah. And not just Utah, a specific area of Utah that we want to talk about, which is key to this part of your story, but also dating, marriage, and not only a same-sex relationship, but an intergenerational relationship, which is something that we haven't really had an opportunity to talk much about on the Latter Gay Stories podcast. So you say my story is just vanilla, there's not much here. I'm so excited to have this interview because there's so much about your story that I think our Latter Gay Stories audience will connect with. So with all that aside, Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Where do we start? I would love the audience to get to know you at a really high level, a 30,000 foot level. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What are your passions? What are your excitements? Who is Josh?
Yeah, so I'm 27 years old. I'm currently a staff accountant at a software company in Utah. I live in the Phoenix area, so I work completely remote. My passions, I very much like drawing. I'm very much into the arts. A lot of my pieces from high school, one of my pieces from high school actually got included in a Springfield art show in Utah. I love math. I also love video games. And I also love travel.
We're going to talk about travel too. So I was just thinking like, yes, we do. And this is going to be part of your great story. I want to take us back and take the audience through the beginning of your story, which really starts in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about where you're from, the culture, and what family life was like in an area that for many of the Latter-day Stories listeners is foreign and unfamiliar.
Yeah, so I grew up in a city called Baguio in the Philippines. It's kind of in the mountainous area. But we live in a very small house. It's probably the size of this room. And I have two older sisters, and we sleep in a bed together with including my mom. Unfortunately, my dad passed when I was six from an accident, so my mom had to raise us just by herself. It was very hard for my mom, being a single mom, having to deal with three kids. But we live a very simple, humbled life.
What did she do for an occupation or to support the family?
My mom did everything that she could for our family, whether it's selling food at my school, or just trying to, she would just make like pastillas, like little candies, and try to sell that on the streets. And then she started selling catered lunch.
Did you recognize, and thank you, that's vulnerable and difficult. Did you recognize the situation, being so young, you were 6 years old, did you recognize how difficult the situation really was? And were you and your siblings, your sisters, also actively involved in helping support the family?
So I was six when my dad died. So I was very young then, and I didn't really have any concept. Like when at my dad's funeral, I wasn't very emotional. Everyone was there, everyone was crying, but I was the only one who was just very innocent. But then, yeah, growing up, the way that we helped my mom is we returned to her by just being good kids and doing great in school. I was always a great academic student. I've been in several math competitions in the Philippines and won a lot of them. So that's kind of how I wanted to help my mom, is just kind of help take the stress off from her and be a good kid.
You said that you were raised Roman Catholic. For a lot of Latter-day Saints, we don't know what that looks like. So kind of describe to us what church and how religion impacted your family.
Yeah, so I would say being Catholic, there's not a lot of personal relationship I get to develop with other people, because, you know, we go to a massive church and there's just, you know, it's random strangers that you have there, and you're there to listen to the same prayers, the same songs every time. And, you know, like they're very outdated prayers. So it's not very personal. So to me, I didn't get much a lot from a Catholic church. You know, it's just something that we do every week, every Sunday, go to mass, take our communion, and then go home.
I've often kind of tongue in cheek talked about Mormonism and some Latter-day Saints, as a pray, pay, and obey member. In Catholicism, it isn't so much the pay, but it's often just or sometimes not even the obey. There's a lot of pray, but, in terms of overall indoctrination, did you see that in your home at all? I mean, was there a strict set of rules, an orthodoxy that you were expected to live as a Catholic, or did your mom want to see that in the home?
My mom just wanted us to live a good life. It wasn't there were rules, but it's mostly just to help guide us, be good kids, not necessarily, you know, like don't drink tea, don't drink coffee and stuff like that. It's just Yeah, my mom was just very strict with scholar, with our academics. That's pretty much it.
I'm curious, and I ask this question to a lot of the guests, especially because we're a podcast that talks about sexuality and gender orientation. At what point do you realize, Josh, I'm different? I'm not like all the other kids.
It's always been there. I don't think there's a one time where I, you know, like, oh, I'm gay. Growing up with in a female household, and also I grew up with two of my very close female cousins. So I was playing with Barbies growing up. I don't ever remember playing with cars or anything. And I remember going out of the shower and wrapping the towel around me like it's a dress. I remember wrapping the towel around my hair and making it look like it's my hair, my long hair. And in the Philippines, it's very big on beauty pageants. So we did a lot. I aspired a lot to those female models, and I would take my mom's heels. I would wear them. I would take our blanket and just wrap it and wear it like a gown and introduce myself in a beauty pageant way.
Did you see, I'm completely unfamiliar with the Philippine culture around sexuality and gender topics and discussions and gender identity. Kind of fill us in. Tell us what it's like to be gay, or the culture behind sexuality in the Philippines.
Yeah, so I would say with my family, I was able to be myself. And my mom never really stopped me from just acting out how I wanted to be. I was a little bit more careful with my immediate family, like with my grandpa, my uncles. They kind of have like a police or a military background, so I wanted to be a little bit more careful. But in school, grade school, I was very out and proud. I would be singing and dancing in school, and my best friend, she would always say how I'm so girly, how some flirty, even more than her. So I think I was able to be that. And my aunts especially, they just kind of allowed me to be that way. Even though I know in the Philippines that same-sex marriage is, I don't think it's still legal in the Philippines. But yeah, I was able to just kind of be myself.
I think I want to explore that a little bit. I want to explore the cultural aspect of sexuality. If being able to have a gay marriage, a same-sex relationship in the Philippines is so frowned upon, I'm curious how religion views that. Predominantly, the religion is Catholicism in the Philippines, and in much of those Asian countries in that area. So what was taught religious-wise, if anything, do you remember in Catholicism regarding this topic? And then politically, in the government, what did you see on Main Street in the actual areas that you lived in regarding these topics?
Yeah, so I moved here when I was 15. So my knowledge with culture and politics is very limited. But I know, there was no real discussion about same-sex marriage in our family or in our religion. I feel like it's Because to me, when I was growing up, like the word gay is really refers more to someone's femininity. When someone calls you bakla, which is gay in the Philippines, it's more about them acting in a feminine way. But yeah, I have not much knowledge about same-sex relationships now in the Philippines. I think like civil unions are allowed there, but I don't think it has progressed.
The interesting part of your story is that it intersects with Mormonism. So we have you growing up as a youth in the Philippines, originally as a Roman Catholic, but at some point Mormonism shows up and knocks at the door. Not literally, but kind of. Tell us a little bit about how you converted to the church and the kind of the experiences around you joining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, so my aunt, she lives in San Diego and she loves to visit the Philippines. Most of our family is there. So whenever she would come there, she would go to the local LDS church there. And we were always just curious on what her church looks like. So we decided to come with her at one time. And from then it started, you know, they got our names. The missionaries came to our house and we just started learning about the gospel and we liked it. I think for me, being a 12-year-old kid who hasn't had a father, what really stuck out to me is their message of, you know, families are together forever. And I wanted that to be able to see my dad again. And, you know, the promise that, oh, you can, he can be baptized in the spirit world and, you know, you can be sealed together in the temple, that stuck out to me.
You were 12 when you were baptized?
Yes.
Did your whole family join the church?
Yes. It was our decision and we liked it. We enjoyed it. What really was very helpful to us is it provided us, I would say, a little bit more order and a little bit more guidance in our family so that, you know, we have like this straight and narrow path. And that helps my mom because it's hard to raise 3 kids just by yourself. So I think with the church's teachings and guidance, that was something that we liked about it.
Yeah, and it sounds like it was probably a very beneficial and uplifting experience for your family. If nothing else, the church, I think, was probably, as you talked about, I think, which is super important, it provided father figures in your life. It provided structure in your life. But it also likely provided some type of financial and supportive situations for your mother.
Yes, it did.
Because with the church, and this is a culture we don't often talk about, but I actually think that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints deserves some credit in its ability to support people who are struggling. And so not only just temporal and spiritual experiences, but in a very real way, some monetary opportunities with food and with housing and the ability to help families who are desperate and in need. There's always criticism on the extent to which the church can use its vast resources to continue to help. But from what I hear in your story, that was an opportunity that your family specifically could benefit from.
Yes, it was very beneficial. And we also, we like to fellowship with other members of the church too. Like church in the Philippines is very different. It's fun. It's not as strict. And I would say it really comes down to the Filipino culture of family. Because when you go to church in the Philippines, it feels like family. I love going to church in the Philippines. And, you know, after our church service, we would have potluck after. Like every family would bring food and we would eat together. So that's something that I really liked about it. It's just, it's more of a family there.
And that's a great segue, because the church is so focused, forward-focused, and hyper-focused on the creation of a nuclear family, a family that looks and acts and performs a certain way. And in your situation, your family wasn't very nuclear. It wasn't the traditional Mormon family, because you have a single mom who is raising three children on her own. And for all that Mormonism teaches, that isn't the proper Mormon family. So how does your family evolve now that they're in the church, with this new, not only a new culture and a new life as a religious family, but does your mom begin dating? Is there pressure there for your mom to take a Mormon husband?
Yeah, there is. But I would say, before that, you know, there's the promise of, you know, having your, baptizing your dad in the temple. And I was very looking forward to that. But I always struggled because, I know being gay, I feel like I'm not as worthy sometimes to be able to do that. So when we got to the temple, I don't know what happens, but I thought I was going to be the one to be the one to be baptized for my dad. But it was another young man who was baptized. So even then I felt like I wasn't really worthy because of my sexuality. But then after that, you know, with my mom, she was introduced to do an LDS dating website, and that is how she met my stepdad there.
So something like LDS singles, some website, for the listeners who may be unfamiliar. You have eHarmony, you have Plenty of Fish, you have these Christian Mingle websites that are specific to Christians who are out there trying to find other Christians to date. And not surprising, there are Mormon websites to help Latter-day Saints date.
Yes.
Probably the most popular, not sponsoring this episode, are like LDS singles, but then also for youth, one called Mutual, which are two predominantly Latter-day Saint-based dating apps or dating websites that help people who have similar backgrounds and interests get to know each other. So your mom, she meets or begins dating
Someone
from the United States?
Yes. There was a couple of guys that she was dating, but it was my stepdad, Jesse, who was the one that she really fell in love with. And, you know, we were still in the Philippines, so we were video chatting with him, and we were just always excited to meet him and to, you know, to me, to also have a father. That's also very important to me.
How old were you when your mom started dating Jesse?
Probably when I was 13, 14.
And what were originally or early on as she was dating? I'm just trying to kind of put myself in the shoes of a 12 or 13 year old young man who his whole life is in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
His whole life is unique and different from a lot of the other kids. But it sounds like it's just a beautiful, like loving familial relationship that your mom has created. Was there these levels of excitement about following this American dream, or trepidation about what may come of a relationship that's blossoming and becoming stronger?
Yeah, you know, definitely growing up in the poor in the Philippines and seeing movies of what the America is like, it, you know, we were very excited for it. And but it's not like my mom married my dad, you know, just to get into the U.S., but because she really loved him. But yeah, we were very just mesmerized about the idea of going here and just living a better life. Because, yeah, it was very, very tough in the Philippines, but we were definitely very excited.
How long did your mom and your stepdad date before things started getting serious? And were there opportunities for your family or your mom to meet in the United States or visit in the United States prior to marriage?
So my dad came once to the Philippines, and that's actually when they got married there. He came there and he was able to just kind of look into our culture, and see what life is like there. And, you know, he was riding tricycles and the jeepneys, and he wasn't very, really expecting all of that. Just riding it out in the open. But my dad, we loved him from the very moment that we met him. He was very comforting and very much a father figure.
All the things that you had wanted and desperately hoped for.
Yes.
Your whole life.
Yes.
How long did your mom and dad live together, or after their marriage, that the discussion about moving to the United States take place?
So my dad was probably in the Philippines for maybe a month, I would say, if I remember. And, you know, as soon as they got married, it was very much a topic that he wanted us to bring here. So he was able to work, get the paperwork done. But also at that time, my oldest sister was applying to BYU Idaho. But that, because she was applying to BYU Idaho, she wasn't approved to come to the U.S. Because our family is also migrating, because they're thinking that maybe Sarah's going to BYU Idaho and then just staying in the U.S. to be with her family.
That makes sense. Just a curious question about the actual marriage. I wanted to ask this and forgot. Were they married in the temple? Was it a civil marriage?
It was a civil marriage. I think there might be, it might be like an LDS sponsored church, but it was outside the temple.
And coming to Utah, I'm super curious about the culture shock. You eventually are approved. Your family is approved to immigrate into the United States. And I would just love to understand what that experience is like. The what your expectations were. Maybe we start there. What did you expect Utah and the United States to be?
I honestly didn't have any expectation of what Utah is going to be like. I just know that, you know, what you see in the movies, the U.S., like all these tall buildings, metropolitan areas, that sounded very fascinating to me. So we flew into Portland. That was our destination port. And then we flew into Salt Lake City. And my aunt was there to also just kind of welcome us to Salt Lake City. And I just remember being mesmerized and, you know, I'm going to live here. I'm going to live here in this city. You know, I'm just very culture shocked, you know, like our very first restaurant we went to was Chakarama, which was buffet. And we don't have that in Philippines. It probably would be very hard to have it in Philippines because people would just eat everything. But it was awesome to see multiple varieties of food and drinks. And then also just going to a Sonic drive-thru. I didn't know you can go through a drive-thru and just park your car there and order food while you're still in your car.
I'm just thinking like all of these things that means nothing to me. Like I just think of the idea of, I mean, how many times have I driven to Sonic and not even thought about the reality of the whole experience?
Yeah.
This had to have just been just inundated with so much new information and so many new things.
It was.
Was it emotionally draining? Was it exhausting to have those experiences?
I don't think it was exhausting, but I was very much just very open and very much I wanted to see more. Like we would go to Temple Square and visit all the different buildings. So yeah, I would say my very first months in the US, I was very much an explorer.
The reality of moving to the US, the tall buildings, the art, the culture, were all these hopes and dreams that you had as a young Filipino kid. What was the reality? Where did you end up moving when you got to Utah? And were those expectations met?
Certainly not. Like I remember the ride home, you know, after our few getaways in Salt Lake City. You know, we were just driving. It was a very long drive. It was probably like an hour drive. And we were getting into like more of like a farm area where there's cows everywhere. And I'm just like, are we sure this is the right place? You know, in the Philippines, I grew up in the city too. So it was very much a culture shock. And so when we got to my dad's house and he had like this very big farm behind him, it was very different to me. And it was, you know, it was definitely something I need to tackle on.
With the new move, not only do we have a cultural shock, a whole new culture to live in and experience, but you also now need to meld or migrate into a new school system and a new faith tradition in a very real way. Because yes, we know that Mormonism in the Philippines isn't the same Mormonism that exists in Utah.
Yes.
I'd love for you to share your experiences both in school and academics and also religiously. What was different and what experiences you had?
Yeah, so I moved to Tree Mountain or to Elwood. And I would say it's probably at least 80% white people. I think not even 1% Asian. So I was very much in the minority there. And also just to be gay, where that is not really accepted there, was very challenging for me. It was probably the toughest years of my life. In school, I always still strive to be a good academic student. But I never grew up having friends, like true friends in high school. I do remember people approaching me and saying hi to me, but I feel like I was put into this shell because I was so different. And I feel like I just wanted to be in this shell. And that was very hard for me because in the Philippines, I was a very proud person. But coming here, I just felt like I lost myself.
you attribute a lot of that, a lot of that pain and a lot of the negative experiences that you had, to the Latter-day Saint culture, to, because I believe for the audience, you said you moved to Tremonton. Tremonton is located in the northern part of Utah near the Idaho border. Industry-wise, the main economic factors in that community is farming and ranching. So I get everything you're talking about here, Josh. I get the cultural issues. The fact that the only person of color or very few people of color in your school is probably your family and others in a much more distant area, or laborers. That is the extent of culture in some of these very small towns. And that is a problem for Utah, that there just isn't an extensive culture here. So I get that. And also, just church-wise, I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, even moving here and just adjusting to the culture, my dad was, he wanted us to live an American life. In the Philippines, you know, we would eat with our spoon and fork. That's how we eat. But here, you eat with your fork. To me, that just was very hard, because it's hard to get rice with, and we eat a lot of rice, so it's hard to eat rice with fork. So that was something that he tried to change about me. No, I love my dad, but, you know, he said, you know, this is, you know, like, this is America. Like, you should be living our culture, kind of like something like that. But I know it was very hard for me.
Did your dad have other children from a previous relationship?
He did. He I think he was married twice before, and then he also had and then on his second marriage he had four children. Yeah, but they're all they're all grew up like in a white culture. Yeah.
What was your relationship like with your step siblings?
I did not have a relationship with them because they were divorced, so I never met them.
You alluded to this expectation of culture and this expectation of living the American dream. And you're in America now, that statement that you said from your dad. What did that mean? Was there some connotation there? Was there some... was this a passive aggressive way of your dad saying, leave your femininity in the Philippines and grow up and be a man?
Yes.
In the West?
I would say definitely, because I think my dad also knew that I was gay very as soon as he met me in the Philippines. But I remember when I moved to the US and I went to my room, which was in the basement. And I wondered why am I in the basement? There's also two other rooms upstairs. Why only one of my sisters is going to use the other room? The other one is a vacant room. Why am I being in the basement? So I feel like that was part of his way to maybe man me up and not be scared. And then also going into my room, I saw he put there some baseball gloves and a baseball. So I think he definitely wanted me to live a more masculine life.
Did it work? Did you just miraculously change this beautiful aspect and part of who you were?
It did not. I remember... I gave it an effort. you know, I tried to play baseball with him, but I just was never good at it. I tried to play baseball with my neighbors, but I'm just not someone who can catch a ball. I think the one thing that I only adapted to here was just like gardening and mowing a lawn. We didn't have it in the Philippines. So that was one thing that he taught me, and he raised me, and I actually enjoyed it. And it taught me a lot of good things. But yeah, like even for in high school, I was never a a very sporty guy. Like even when we have PE, I hated playing dodgeball. I hated going into the locker room to change because I don't want people to see me in my colorful underwear. So I kind of like always try to change like in the corner or always change last.
Growing up and having these experiences in northern Utah in these farming communities brings with it a second part of this discussion, and that is the religious culture. Northern Utah, specifically, that area, Brigham City, Logan, very, very Latter-day Saint, very traditional. I would love to understand what your experience was like as a gay Asian in Mormonism in that part of the state.
I will say I lived a fake life. I strive to do everything I tried to live a life that they wanted for me. Yeah, I just like always put a smile on my face and just try to do everything I can to be a good deacon, be a good teacher, go to every young man's activities. But I knew that deep down inside that, you know, that I don't really fit in.
There is a history within Mormonism, and we could spend a completely different podcast episode on the issues with race and racial problems within Mormonism, but specific to the Book of Mormon and specific to the area from which you came, there is this distinction between two types of people in Mormonism and its culture, and that of the Lamanites and the Nephites. The Nephites being a group of people who are fair-skinned, white, and desirous and blessed by God. And the culture of the Lamanites, the wicked, those who were unfavored by God, who were sinning, who were evil, were warrior and mean. Did you experience these levels of racism in your church experience? How do you manage or mitigate those types of situations?
I don't think I've experienced racism in the church. Fortunately, they've always been accepting of our Filipino family. What's helpful is we have a neighbor who also served in the Philippines. So he did a Philippine mission, and he was able to just help us get adjusted to the church. I thank his family for that. We were very close with them. And I think there's also another Japanese family in our ward. But as far as racism in the church, they've always been very accepting of our race.
Did you, with specific to your church leaders, because typical in Mormonism, as we've discussed many times in this podcast, is the expectation that when a 12-year-old turns 12, he receives the priesthood. And then he kind of graduates these different levels of priesthood service in Mormonism. It's called the Aaronic and Melchizedek priesthoods. And within those priesthoods are different opportunities for service. A deacon is a 12-year-old priesthood holder, a teacher is a 14-year-old priesthood holder, and a priest is a 16-year-old priesthood holder. After the graduation of those kind of three steps of priesthood service, then comes this big discussion about serving a mission and an obligation to serve a mission to represent the church and to wear the name tag that bears Jesus Christ's name. You didn't serve a mission.
I did not.
Which means that you didn't follow that cultural expectation. I'm curious about your discussions about your sexuality with your church leaders. Were they, did you have them? And were those discussions part of a reason why you didn't serve a mission?
So growing up in the Philippines, you know, I've always said I wanted to be a missionary. Because when the missionaries would come to our house, they're always so inviting, so very warm. And we enjoyed their company. And I was preparing myself to become a missionary. And I've always been posting on Facebook some of the teachings that I've learned from the gospel. And I know that my aunt, who introduced us to the church, she would often comment saying, "I'm going to be a good missionary. You're going to be the next, you know, missionary in the Castro family." But I knew that still deep down inside that me being gay, that I would struggle in my mission, if I were able to do one. I never discussed my sexuality with my church leaders. And I don't think I really plan to do it because I don't really want to subject myself in a room where I will be judged for being me. And I think that's just, that's like the choice that I choose.
If you didn't choose to serve a mission and you did that to, I feel maybe that there was this choice also was a way to protect you from the church, but maybe in a real way to protect the church from you in that aspect as well, by whether that be awkward, whether that be inconvenient or strange or unorthodox for the church to have a gay missionary that just didn't fit those norms. If you choose not to serve a mission and then choose not to kind of pursue that path that is expected, did you decide then to begin dating? What does Josh do with Josh in these situations? How do you move forward and where do you go?
Yeah, like definitely in like even in high school, I never dated a girl. The only time I went to a school dance was for girls' choice, and a girl invited me. But even then, I knew that it wasn't right. But I still went. I never went to prom. I never had the opportunity to ask, you know, who I really want to go to. I think after moving to, after high school, I moved to the University of Utah for my college. And that's kind of where I started exploring myself more. And I still was trying to go to the university ward in the church just to kind of test it out and see. I knew that I really wasn't feeling the spirit when I was going to church. So eventually I just stopped going.
What did you plan on majoring in? And what were your expectations for university, for college?
So I went into accounting. I've always loved numbers. And I think college is a big thing for me because I don't think my mom finished her education, so I wanted to be able to be that person to finish college. But I also wanted to move to Salt Lake City and kind of explore myself. So that's, I was very much excited for college.
I want to definitely have this conversation about what this exploration looks like. Because I kind of get the sense throughout your story that this might be the very first time that you've given yourself an opportunity to date. The very first time you've given yourself an opportunity to borrow Mormon terms, to live the fullest measure of your creation, mm-hmm. To be able to explore this part of you that for probably a 3 to 4 year period has been really repressed. Mm-hmm. Let's dive into that. I'm super fascinated.
I know that my interests are very different because I'm very much attracted to people older than me. And so, you know, I tried dating apps and my very first boyfriend, he was actually probably in his late 50s. And I know that that is not very common, especially, you know, just, you know, being gay, but also trying to love someone who is of a different generation than you is a little hard. And I've also dated another guy in his mid-30s, but I knew that, you know, that older was kind of my interest.
How does, where do you begin dating? Where do you begin finding those? I mean, the apps weren't there, but I'm just curious on how you begin that exploration process.
So I did the apps, and that's how I met some of the guys. And just trying to, you know, see what my interests are. But yeah, I connected with my very first boyfriend, and he was in his 50s, and I like the maturity. I kind of like to, sometimes I like to think myself like I think older sometimes. But I know even for that situation, I can't just be out and proud sometimes because even for the LGBT community, that can also be frowned upon.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about this because we don't have a lot of stories on the podcast about intergenerational relationships. I want to talk, and I think you've been really awesome about being candid and open. So I'm going to press you a little bit because I'm really curious about what you thought the fears were. What preconceived notions you thought the public might have, or even your family, about those types of relationships. So I just kind of want to contrast those preconceived issues, perceived issues that you thought existed, with the actual real lived experiences of you dating older men. I'm just curious about how that unfolded for you.
Yeah, so I definitely had a lot of talk with my mom, and you know, when she was talking to me, she maybe said, you know, I understand maybe because you didn't have a father growing up. So maybe you're attracted to older people because you're kind of looking for a father figure or something like that. And I don't really feel that way because I'm just really attracted to maturity. And then just, you know, also just the physicalities and the looks. Sorry, what was the question again?
I really just wanted to contrast those, what you think society has against this type of relationship as opposed to what the reality was for you.
Yeah, so definitely like my mom was very concerned if an older person is just using me. Or if I'm using them, if I'm being in it for the money, or you know, for not the right reasons. And I understand that you know, those concerns, but it's definitely very hard to explain.
Sure it is. And it's hard to explain, and it's not something that we get often. And so the other part of this that I was thinking about as you were sharing your story and over the years that I've gotten to know you and your husband is the old church message. And your husband talked about this in his episode, that the reasons why people are gay are because the things that you just talked about, the fact that there was no prominent father figure in your life, that there was... Josh, you should really look at this analytically. The reason why you're gay is because you had a missing father. Now you can't just replace that with this experience. These are just all things that culture and society have brought into this discussion that I think are wholly unfair. And they're not backed by anything other than someone who has not had these experiences trying to explain what our experiences are like.
Yeah. And I don't think like having a stepdad fixed me. I don't think having a father figure fixed changed me. To me, it just even more solidified what I am.
You are who you are. And I think that's part of the message that I try to get across with this podcast, is that not only are you not broken, but you are not alone in your experiences as well. That there are beautiful opportunities ahead for you if you live and move forward to finding those things that sustain and satisfy you.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, just also, You're going.
No, you're good. We're going to bring your husband in on this next episode. And again, for those who are maybe joined us mid-interview, this is a three-part interview series. Your husband, Richard, had an interview prior to this one. We're understanding a little bit more of your story. And then we're going to bring the two of you together in an episode to be able to share and dive into these subjects a little more. Because I would imagine... and I say this because I already know the answer, but your husband had some issues actually with dating, this intergenerational dating experience. And the way this unfolds, I think, is beautiful. And it really changed me in a very real way. So I want to talk a little bit about that, but how your relationship unfolds. And this next episode will absolutely be about love, and it'll be about connection and your wedding and the way forward, and combining both your experiences and his experiences into a whole new experience and a whole new opportunity for you as a couple to grow. But before we get to that third part of the episode, I just want to give you an opportunity to now follow through. And is there something that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about? Is there something that you want the audience members to specifically know about your story, or maybe a goal that you had as part of your episode that you wanted listeners to understand?
Yeah, so I think for me, you know, growing up in a Catholic and then being a convert, and then also just having the pressures from family, I had to change myself. I had to hide away who I really am. And sometimes I feel like I'm a disappointment even to my family, because, you know, I'm the only son in our family, and I don't get to carry our last name to multiple generations. And I really struggled a lot in my younger years to be myself. And I think if I could just go back and tell my younger self right now, just let him know that you're beautiful just the way you are. And you don't have to change yourself for anybody. Because my life experience has changed me so much that I feel like it's hard for me to go back to where I was, because I was just put so much into this shell. So that's what I would tell myself, is just be who you are. You're beautiful.
What do you tell your small Northern Utah community, a community that you completely did not expect the United States to be? Any advice to that culture in regards to experiences now looking back that you've had, and opportunities that you've had to grow as a person? If you had an opportunity just to stand in the public square and share something with that community, what might that be?
I would say, if you see a kid who is struggling, who feels like they're different, even if at first they would try to push you away because they feel like they're just so different, I just want you to just keep trying and not stop, and reach out to them, because they deserve love and they deserve to be respected for who they are.
Lastly, I think I see you as a beautiful success, as this person of incredible strength and immense love and pureness. I wonder what your advice would be to other Filipino kids who are in a situation different than you, who are still in the Philippines, in a culture and a society that doesn't afford its queer members the opportunities that you have. What might you tell them?
Just keep being you. Mahalin mo ang sarili mo. Ikaw yan. Mahalin mo ang pamilya mo. At huwag mong kalimutan na mahalin mo ang sarili mo.
You said that with a lot of emotion.
Because I wish somebody said that to me.
Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
What a beautiful episode. You make me cry. I often say my cold, hard heart can't be broken. Thank you.
Thank you.
How are we supposed to do another episode if you're going to leave us like this? A crying mess. We want to thank you the Latter Gay Stories audience for the opportunity that you've given us to hear Josh's story. And if you haven't yet, we invite you to catch Richard's story posted prior to this one. And now we will be able to share with you the couple's version, which will be the next podcast episode coming up after this one. Thank you. Thank you for leaning into these experiences for better understanding, for your comments, for your ability to draw closer to people like Josh, and to better understand a more broad, I don't even want to say that, just a more detailed look at what some people have to go through in order to find authenticity and honesty in their life. So thank you. Thank you for being kind and for better understanding these experiences. Again, for those of you who are watching on a video version of our podcast episodes, we invite you to share your comments below. Any particular experiences, thoughts that you had during this episode, we'd love to hear them. We'd love for you to participate in the comment section of our Facebook and YouTube pages to be able to share those experiences with others who are following along. And again, for those who are listening to this as a podcast episode on one of our podcast players, we invite you to comment about this episode and others that we have posted, and also to subscribe to this channel so that you will have an opportunity to receive additional episodes and interviews like this. Again, thank you. Thank you to Josh for sharing his story. Thank you to the audience members for giving your time and energy and participation in episodes like this. It's stories like yours, it's stories like mine, and it's stories like Josh's that help us each continue writing our own Latter Gay Stories.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.